Okay, hi everyone. My name is Caitlin, and I am a recruitment analyst that specializes in the Middle East and North Africa and the Global Award. Today, I am joined by my colleague, Michelle, who is in our DC office, and she is a recruitment lead for South and Central Asia and Europe. Today, we are going to be talking about several of the multi-country opportunities that are in our catalog. And as we're going through, if you have questions, if you type them into the question module on the right of your screen, we will try to answer some of them as we go along, but we will also have a question and answer session at the end of the webinar. So we're going to get started now with a little bit about the history of the program. So the Fulbright program was established in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas. Having had his own exchange experience abroad through a Rhodes Scholarship, he was able to see firsthand the value of international and people-to-people exchange for fostering mutual understanding. Using the sale of surplus U.S. government World War II property to fund the program, he introduced it as a bill in Congress, and it was signed into law by President Truman. The Fulbright Program remains the flagship international exchange program designed to increase international mutual understanding between the people of the U.S. and people of other nations. It is sponsored by the State Department's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs and administered by us here at IIE and in close collaboration with U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions abroad. Today, the program operates in approximately 125 countries worldwide. Before we discuss the specific awards, I want to review the basic eligibility requirements for this program. These regulations have been created and revised by the presidentially appointed J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, which we call the FFSB. At the time of the application, there are several eligibility requirements that must be met. One is U.S. citizenship. It is required, and permanent resident status is not sufficient. If you're not a U.S. citizen and you're interested in learning about how you can come to the U.S. To undertake research or teaching, you'll want to be looking at the Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program. And then, depending on the award, a PhD or professional terminal degree may be required. For professionals and artists, recognized professional standing and substantial professional accomplishments are required in lieu of a terminal degree. We also require some teaching experience, either a certain number of years or in the field proposed with the lecturing. That will also depend on the award. I also want to mention that there are new policies that govern eligibility as it relates to previous Fulbright U.S. Scholar Grants. So if you've had a U.S. Scholar Grant in the last 2 years, there's a two-year waiting period between the time that your previous grant ended and when you're eligible to apply. So if you've had a Fulbright Scholar Grant in the last 2 years, please reach out to us to make sure that you are eligible to apply this year.
And in terms of the application components, we've outlined them here. It's an online application that you'll be filling out. And we're going to give a little more in-depth information about the project statement, which is really at the core of the application. This is where you outline what you propose to do and where. And then there are page limits for the CV, and we ask that you ask for three letters of reference. And depending on the award you apply for, you may need to submit some syllabi or the bibliography for your research project, the language proficiency report indicating your level of proficiency in that particular language as it relates to the award. And the vast majority of awards do indicate a preference for a letter of invitation. Some indicate a requirement, so we have some information about that and how you can attain one. And depending on your background, if it's in the arts or writing, journalism, architecture, supplemental materials will need to be provided in the application, and we have some guidance on that on our website as well. In terms of a host affiliation and a letter of invitation from that particular country or the host, in terms of a host institution, some awards do outline where the scholar will be placed, and that will be listed under the location. Particularly if it's a partner award, that means it's Fulbright, let's say Fulbright and the University of Leeds, so you would need to get a letter of invitation from that particular host. If a host is not identified and it's listed, you know, any appropriate institution, then there's a few resources that we have available for you. So, of course, you can reach out to the campus liaison, the Fulbright campus liaison at your university or the international office. We also have the Fulbright Scholar Directory, which is a wonderful resource on our website where you can type in and search according to host country, host institution, or even home institution, and the name and contact of the person is there, so you could reach out to them and ask their suggestion. And you could also you know, reach out to us here at IIE for more information. Just to let you know, the letter of invitation that you would receive from a host institution, a potential host, is not binding. So they may have a standard kind of format that they provide all scholars who are requesting that. So it's a non-binding expression of interest, and it should come from the person that you hope to collaborate with on the institutional letterhead. And of course, if it has a little more detail exactly about what you're going to be doing and for what length of time, all of those things should match up with what you've listed in your project statement. So the more robust the letter can be, the more it will enhance your application and, you know, kind of indicate the level of interest that the host has in your project.
So before I talk about Flex, I see a couple of questions that I want to just get out of the way. A couple of questions about whether certain institutions are recognized or eligible hosts. Whether a host is eligible, either A, you can find that in the award description. Sometimes the award description will have specific institutions that are listed. For the Global Award, all universities are eligible. If you have any questions about specific institutions, you can email us. But in general, for the Global Award, any institution of higher education is eligible. Then we have a question about the syllabi that you're required to submit. What should it be? One from a current course that you're teaching at your home institution? It can be. You can either put together a package of syllabi that are completely new that you've created for your grant, or you can include ones from previous courses, or a combination of both. It's really up to you. But you should indicate whether the syllabus was created for this application or if it's a syllabus from a previous course. Okay. So the Flex option was designed for scholars that require multiple visits to the host country over shorter segments. And so if you are not able to go in one, you know, big 10-month chunk of time, if you want to split up your grant into several shorter segments over two consecutive academic years, that's something that is possible for some awards. So the parameters are as follows. The minimum length of a grant segment is at least 1 month. The maximum length of a segment is 3 months, and then when you add them all up, they need to equal at least 3 months, a maximum 6 months. So it sounds kind of confusing, but for as an example, you could spend 2 months in Egypt in the fall of 2019, and then you come home, and then you spend 2 months in another country, Spain, somewhere else. It really, the countries that are eligible depend on the award, but then you could, you know, go back and do another 2 month segment in the summer of 2020. But all of these segments that you would propose would need to add up to at least 3 months, but cannot add up to more than 6 months total. For the Flex Awards, we advise that if you are wanting to do this, to just include some information in your project statement about why you're planning to do it this way, and you should have a detailed timeline. It can oftentimes will just look like bullet point format. You can say months one and two, I'm going to be here. Months three and four, I'm going to be here. And you just need to lay it out so that the reviewers are able to see what your exact plans are. Okay, so we're going to start jumping to the awards. The first one we're going to talk about today is the Africa Regional Research Program. This program offers the opportunity to conduct research in up to three sub-Saharan Africa countries in Africa. This award is for research only, and it requires a PhD, as well as letters from each proposed host country. So for each country that you're planning to go to, you need to have a separate letter of invitation from each host. The program has two overall objectives. One is to increase or develop new contacts and intellectual ties between the U.S. and African communities, and two, to contribute to scholarship on Africa. The most competitive proposals would be those that describe a significant and achievable research project and that demonstrate commitment to developing scholarly relationships with African faculty. Applications are sought in all disciplines, and grantees will also be expected to give occasional lectures and seminars in consultation with the host universities and U.S. embassies, and provide copies of their research findings to their host colleagues or institutions. Applications are accepted for all countries in the region that have an active Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, except for South Africa. Research proposals for South Africa must be submitted separately under the South Africa Awards. And if you're trying to find out whether we have an active Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program in a particular country, it's pretty simple. If you just go to our award catalog and click on the country dropdown, all of those countries listed there have active Fulbright programs. If a country is not listed on that list, it means that we do not have an active program there.
Okay, and the next award is the ASEAN Research Program. That's the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. So this organization is made up of 10 countries, and it's there to promote Pan-Asianism and intergovernment cooperation. And so this award is open to all disciplines, but there is a preference in area studies and economics, environmental sciences, law, political science, public administration, and public and global health, particularly pertaining to the Southeast Asia regions and the countries that make up ASEAN. This is a research-only award, and a PhD is not required. Letters from host institutions in the two or three countries are preferred, so that would certainly enhance your application if you were to get them, but you would still be eligible to apply if you do not have a letter. And this award is also open to early career applicants. So if you've just had come out of your postdoc or you're just starting your career, this might be a great chance for you to go to that particular region and do some research. Again, two countries at the minimum, three at the maximum. You'd have to propose a research project that pertains to two or three of those countries for a grant length of 3 to 6 months. The affiliations can be with either universities or think tanks, NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and research centers. If you have any particular questions about this program, this research program, please contact our colleague Alexa Rowland, and her email is eastasiapacific@iie.org.
And so the Fulbright Carlos Rico Award for North American Studies offers an exciting opportunity to conduct research in both Canada and Mexico. The grant is 4 to 10 months long, and your time would be evenly divided between Canada and Mexico. The award can be hosted by any university, government agency, or research institution in Canada and Mexico. They're looking for projects across a broad range of disciplinary and interdisciplinary focuses. However, it should be shown that the research focus promotes collaboration and adds value to the current body of research inherent in our trilateral relationship, which is shaped by our shared borders, current events, and common interests. A letter of affiliation from a host institution in each country is required by the time of the grant start date. And so if you don't have the letters of invitation by the time you're submitting your application, that's fine. You'll just need to continue to pursue them after you submit your application and have them by the time that you would start the grant. Intermediate proficiency in Spanish is required for Mexico. And the level of Spanish proficiency should be commensurate with the requirements of the project. And then also, if you are proposing affiliation at a Francophone host country, host institution in Canada, French language ability may also be required.
Okay, and the next one we have is the Fulbright-Schumann European Union Affairs Program, and this is, again, a research-only award. This is a unique opportunity to kind of have researchers delve deeper into issues that relate to the EU-US relationship or EU affairs in one or two EU member states. The preference is for two, but if you have a compelling proposal to be placed in just one EU state, that's fine. They are particularly interested in, it's a 3 to 9 month grant opportunity, but the preference is for grants that are in length for 4 to 6 months in duration. And affiliations are, you know, up to the researcher, so any appropriate institutions, including European universities, governments, not-for-profits, and think tanks. And a great aspect of this award is that grantees, this is administered by the Belgian Commission, so grantees would be incorporated into the Fulbright programming at the Fulbright Commission in Belgium, and invited to the annual EU seminar, where there's that mid-year meeting with the EU mission to the EU, the US mission to the EU, and the European Commission officials. I want to give a few examples of what this particular award is looking for in terms of topics. It's not an exhaustive list, but it would give you an idea of what really the Commission's interested in. So a few examples are higher education mobility policy, internal and external security, peacekeeping, common foreign security policy, and NATO, information sharing, finance, trade, and human rights, as well as agricultural and environmental policies, human trafficking, EU enlargement, immigration, things like that, so international relations and diplomacy. So all of these are kind of, you know, the topics that they are interested in really having the researcher explore deeper in terms of EU and U.S. Issues. So if you have more, if you have questions about this award, you can reach out to me. My email address is there, and I'd be happy to assist you with your questions and your application. The other award we have is also with Schumann. It's the Innovation Award, and this is a wonderful opportunity. Again, it's a research-only award. There are two grants available. And again, the issue is to contribute to the transatlantic understanding between the EU and the U.S., particularly, though, in terms of policy and technology. So really, you know, really how we innovate about this. And so some of the things that they've mentioned in the award in terms of their preference for proposals that are focused on U.S.-EU approaches to innovative technologies and business models, and their integration with new and existing policies and regulations. So competitive proposals should address the research topics that focus on the intersection of technology innovation and policy, but are not limited to data privacy and protection, which we all know is now a big thing coming up in Europe with the GDPR and all of the kind of privacy and things going on in terms of data and protecting EU citizens. So this would be a wonderful opportunity to kind of dive deeper into exploring that. Again, just with the as with the EU award, this one is a 3 to 9 month grant with a preference for a project of 4 to 6 months. And again, no particular affiliations are indicated, so appropriate institutions would be universities or governments, not-for-profits, or think tanks. And a letter of invitation is required from each host that you identify.
So the Middle East and North Africa Regional Research Program is intended for applicants whose research projects are either historical in focus, comparative or regional in scope, or based on data collected in several different countries. Scholars can apply to conduct research in two or more countries in the region. It's two or three countries, no more than three. And this can either be over the course of one continuous grant segment or as a flex grant. So for example, you could spend 2 months in Egypt, 2 months in Israel and 2 months in the West Bank. You can do it all in one go, or you can spread the segments out over 1 or 2 academic years. Not all countries in MENA are eligible for this award. Notably, Algeria and Tunisia cannot be included in proposals for this award, or any of the countries that we don't have an active Fulbright program in, which would be Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Libya. There's a couple others, but if it's not listed on the screen here, then it is not a place that you could do the regional research grant. So a PhD is not required for this award. So applications from professionals and artists are very welcome. And like most of the other regional awards, applicants will need a letter of invitation from each host country. I'm the contact for this award, and my email is down there at the bottom. If you have any questions about this, please reach out to me. We have a really exciting new award this year, which is the Morocco-Spain Joint Teaching and Research Award. So Spain and Morocco have historically shared environmental, historical, and cultural links, and the aim of this award is to heighten awareness of those links. So applicants may teach, conduct research, or pursue a combination of teaching and research activities, and those can be at Spanish and Moroccan universities, cultural centers, or research institutions, and projects that are comparative in nature and really address issues linking Morocco and Spain are what they're looking for. The amount of time that you spend in each country should be split up pretty equally. So you can't spend less than 40% of the grant period in either country. This award is open to mid-career and senior scholars in all disciplines and at all academic ranks. And also artists and professionals are encouraged to apply as well.
Okay, great. And another joint teaching and research award involving Spain and Greece. We had this last year for the first time, so we're happy to see it back for the second year. This is a wonderful opportunity for scholars to do teaching or research or a combination of both. The maximum total grant length would be 7 months, so there should be a minimum of 3 months in each country. In terms of locations, they would need to be identified by the researcher, but any Spanish or Greek universities or institutions of higher education, cultural or research centers. So the purpose of this award is to really bring scholars together to explore the ties between Spain and Greece. They've had long historical and cultural links dating back to ancient times. If we remember, even the Renaissance painter known as El Greco, so there were links between Spain and Greece there. And so the projects that the commissions are looking forward to receiving are comparative nature, so comparative projects on addressing historical issues or specific fields of study. So in terms of the letter of invitation, you would need 2 letters of invitation from each country. For Spain, you would need to identify a host and reach out and procure that letter of invitation. For Greece, the Fulbright Commission in Greece would be able to assist, so the commission would be able to assist you in identifying and also reaching out to potential hosts. So there is some assistance there and more details on the award description. So applications are considered in all disciplines across all fields with a special emphasis in disciplines related to Greece and Spain, so archaeology, classical studies, economics, immigration, history and art history, political science, preservation of cultural heritage, tourism, and the arts. And the final award we have, for me at least, is the South and Central Asia Regional Research Program, and this is one that I look after. I really like this award. It's a wonderful opportunity for South and Central Asia. It's the only multi-country offering in the region. And it is an all-disciplines award. It is, again, a research-only grant, but a PhD is not required. So it is open to professionals as well as early career academics and career applicants. Letters of invitation are required, and I've outlined the countries that participate in this in the region. so starting with Bhutan all the way to Uzbekistan. You would need a letter of invitation from all of these countries depending on which two or three you select. However, for India, an invitation letter is not required. And again, something that, you know, proposals that we're looking for would relate to comparative issues across the region, whether historical or contemporary, so it's really open. It's a very open award. They're interested in seeing what scholars are proposing that relate to two or three of the countries, and the grant length is 3 to 9 months. So if you're interested in learning more about this, please reach out to me, and I'd be happy to assist you with that.
Okay, and then we have the big kahuna of the multi-country awards, the Fulbright Global Scholar Award. I actually did a webinar last week that was just about global. So if this is one that you're interested in, I'm going to talk about it today, but I also did a whole hour-long webinar last week that was recorded and it's already been posted up on our website. So there should be all of the answers to your global questions there as well. So the Global Award is a significant innovation for Fulbright. We recently selected only our third cohort for this award, so it's a newer structure of award. The projects proposed must include at least two separate world regions. The regions are defined by the State Department as Sub-Saharan Africa, East Asia and the Pacific, Europe, Eurasia, Middle East and North Africa, South and Central Asia, and Western Hemisphere. And if you want to figure out which countries belong to which regions, that's another thing that you can find out in the awards catalog. If you just click on the country drop-down menu, select the country, click on the award, and right up at the top, displayed very prominently, is the region that that country is considered to belong to by the State Department. So the countries that you can select must be places where we are currently sending U.S. scholars. So to see if a country is eligible, take a look at that drop-down menu. If it isn't listed there, it isn't eligible. Every year we get questions about Switzerland, Lebanon, Chad, Martinique. The simple answer is that if it is not listed in our catalog, it is not eligible. And so projects for this award would take place in two or three different countries in at least two separate world regions. So if you are proposing to do research in France, Germany, and Spain, this is not the award for you because all three of those countries are located in one world region. So what we're looking for, and I'll have an example on the next slide, but is two or three countries in different world regions. So for each country that you propose to visit, you need to have a letter of invitation. The requirement for this award is that you need a separate letter for each country. And while the majority of applicants are hosted by universities, you can also seek affiliation with a research center, a nonprofit, a government agency, a museum, an archive. We've seen it all. So if you have any questions about whether your host is appropriate, just get in touch with me and I can run it by my colleagues at the State Department. This award is open to academics and professionals, so no PhD is required. And you can undertake a research project, a combination of teaching and research, or what is a new activity this year, what we're calling professional projects. So professional projects might include undertaking some kind of study, practical experience in actual operations, visits to organizations in your field, public lectures, or other professional activities. So if your plan sort of incorporates these things and you aren't sure whether or not it's a professional project, that's something that we are still sort of working on defining. So if you think it's a professional project, let us know and we'll be able to kind of tell you whether it falls into the professional project or the research realm. But your plan would need to include a concrete description of your activities as well as the expected benefits for completing the project for you in your professional field. It's important to note that projects must benefit from a global perspective. So your project statement should specify why each country is important to your overarching goal and what you're going to accomplish in each country, as well as how they all link together. You'll also need to provide a very detailed timeline of when each country visit is planned. The earliest grant start date would be May 2019. And the earliest start, the latest start date would be May 2020. And all grants would need to be completed by August 2021. That will make sense in a minute when I give some examples. But preference is given to scholars proposing projects during the host institution's academic year. The grant length minimum is 3 months and maximum is 6 months. And you need to spend at least 1 month in each country. You can do this in one of several ways. One is a multi-country trip, two or three single-country trips, or one dual-country trip. The flex option is available for this award. If that sounds confusing, I sympathize. On the next slide, I have some examples. Okay, so in this example, you would be going to France, Morocco, and Brazil. All three countries are located in different world regions. So for option one, the multi-country trip, you would go back-to-back with no breaks in between. It's one trip that's cut up into these two or three different segments, but you'd be doing them back-to-back-to-back without coming home. The second option would be single-country trips, and this is what we would call a flex grant. So to engage U.S. scholars that are currently unable to spend extended periods of time abroad, we launched this flex option a couple of years ago, which would offer you the opportunity to propose multiple short-term stays. So if you plan to split up your grant into shorter segments, spread out over one or two academic years with return trips to the U.S. in between grant segments, that is flex. You can do it this way, where you would spend 2 months in one country, then come back. Then you would go to Morocco, spend 2 months there, then come back. Then go to Brazil for 2 months and then come back. And that's all sort of spread out over 1 year in this example. But scenario three is what we are calling the dual trips, and this is also flex, where if you wanted to go to France and Morocco one summer and then the next year go back and also go to France and Morocco, you could do that. We don't offer multiple triple country trips, so you could not propose to go to France, Morocco, and Brazil, and then come back and then do it again the very next year. You'd only be able to do one of those multi-country trips. But if you want to do single country trips, you can split them up, or if you want to do dual country trips, you can split them up in that way as well. So that is the global award. So Michelle and I would now like to open the virtual floor to your questions. I see that there are already a lot of them. But if your question is very specific to your situation, please get in touch with us by email for some one-on-one counseling. And I've listed a couple of our frequently asked questions on the screen. So I'm going to start. Michelle, you can see the questions on your end, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And I've been answering some as we go along, so if you take a look in the chat box where you enter your question, you might see some answers from me. So, okay. All right, so Kate, did you want to start with one, or should I take one?
Why don't you start, and I'm going to sort of look through some of these global questions.
Okay, we have a question. Can a professional project under the Global Award be for a for-profit corporation or country? That's an excellent question, and the answer is no. So the purpose of these awards is to further scholarship and collaboration between American scholars and scholars abroad. And since this is a program that is funded by the U.S. Department of State and a lot of the commissions abroad, the project cannot contribute towards a for-profit enterprise. And so we ask that if you are a professional, that the research that you propose pertain to kind of, you know, projects that do not relate to or feed back into a for-profit entity.
Okay, so we have a question. Is the global program open to early career scholars? Is there a preference for more senior scholars? So for the Global Award, it is open to early career scholars, and there's no PhD requirement. I wouldn't say that there's a preference for more senior scholars. What the State Department is really looking for here are projects that are global and comparative in nature. And when they're selecting the awardees for this grant, they are looking for some diversity, so they don't want to send everyone that wants to go to France, Morocco, and Spain. They don't want to send everyone to the same countries. So if you're able to kind of choose some countries that are in undersubscribed regions, like the Middle East or Sub-Saharan Africa, or just countries overall that are a little bit off the beaten path, that is something that they're looking for. But there really is no preference with regard to where you are in your career.
Okay, and I'll take another one. We have some questions about particular countries that are part of the Fulbright program. So I had a question about, is Estonia part of the program or Croatia? So yes, Estonia and Croatia are both, they fall within the Eurasia region. We had a question about Switzerland. It is not in the Fulbright program, so it also wouldn't be eligible for the EU project because it also is not an EU member state. So just take a look when you go into our awards catalog. You'll see the full list of countries that participate in the Fulbright Scholar Program. There have been some suspensions to programs due to political or security issues. So for example, Bangladesh has been suspended, as well as Venezuela, I believe. But for the most part, Fulbright is everywhere. So we really encourage you to check out the website, check out the awards catalog. There are so many opportunities. We have 470 awards that offer about 800 grant opportunities. So there's really no dearth of options for you, whether you're an early career scholar or you're a professor emeriti, that's fine. We have professionals, artists, musicians, and so this program has really evolved over the decades to offer something for everybody. The Department of State is really interested in promoting this across all levels and to all universities, big and small. So really just reach out, check us out online, and send us more questions.
Okay, I see a question. My institutions have requested that I present seminars and lectures rather than a course. Does this meet the teaching requirement? Yes. So presenting seminars, lectures, workshops all fall under the umbrella definition of teaching. So you do not necessarily have to go to teach a full course. You can go to do sort of the smaller teaching engagements, especially if you're doing a flex grant. That is sort of something we recommend. If you're only going to a country for 1 or 2 months, it's hard to teach an entire full semester-long course. It's just not possible. But if you're wanting to teach on a flex grant, and teaching is an activity that's approved in the award description, then seminars, lectures, workshops, teacher training, all of that would be considered teaching. Okay, there's another question about the global award. Can we propose to work with a university in one country and a nonprofit in another? Yes. You can have a variety of different kinds of hosts. If you're working with a university in one country and a nonprofit in the other, just sort of make sure that you are making clear what the connection is between the two of them. The project should be cohesive. All of the different parts are meant to sort of work together. So you wouldn't want to propose something where you are going to a university to do one project and then to another country to do something completely different. So you just need to make the case in your project statement about how the different kinds of institutions are all related to the same project.
Okay, and we have a question about what is the definition of a letter from the host country? Who qualifies as a host? So when we say a letter from the host country, it's interchangeable with host institution. So when you apply for an award, if it's a multi-country award, then you would need a letter of invitation from both or three host institutions that you have outlined in your project. If you're applying just for a single award in a single country, then that would just be one letter that you would need. So again, if it's outlined in the award, if there's a particular host institution that is mentioned, then you would be able to contact that person and that we've outlined in the award description. For the multi-country awards that we're discussing today, most of them do not list any potential host, so that's up to the scholar to identify the most appropriate institution to be affiliated with. And that would just require you reaching out to the person that you hope to collaborate with, having them draft the letter on the institutional letterhead. So, you know, it's an official letter of invitation. Again, it's non-binding, as we mentioned, and indicating their interest in your project and that you would be there, kind of that would be your home base once you're selected and going to that country. And it would outline the length of time that you would be there with the host, the project, the person you would collaborate with, and perhaps they might even mention, yes, we'll provide a desk space and, you know, library access, facilities, research labs, what have you. So the more information that is in that letter from the host institution, the better it is.
Okay, we have a question about, let's see here. Can a former Fulbright scholar to Kenya apply for an Africa Regional Research Award that includes Kenya as one of its 2-3 countries? Yes, you can. If you've previously been to the country as a Fulbrighter, you can go back. What you'll just want to make sure that you're justifying in your application is evidence of the outcomes of your previous grant in Kenya, any ties that you generated as a result of that grant, and explain how a subsequent Fulbright grant to the same country would be building on your previous one. But yes, you would be eligible to apply. Okay. We have a question, how is the budget for the grant determined? So as a part of your application, you're not required to submit a budget. If you are curious about the award benefits for each particular award, it differs from award to award. So on the stipend levels, the housing levels, all the different kinds of benefits will really depend on the award. If you go into the award catalog and navigate over to the award benefits tab, that will give you a good sense of what kind of benefits you can expect from that particular award. For these multi-country awards, it'll often say that, you know, the monthly stipend will follow the rates for the core grants in each proposed country. So essentially what they're meaning is that if you just go to an award description for, say, Thailand is one of the countries that you're proposing to go to, if you go to the Thailand All Disciplines Award and navigate over to the award benefits there, that's generally going to be how they are going to pay you. If you're doing a global grant and you're including Thailand. So each country, your stipend level for each country will vary depending on the cost of living in that country, how many dependents you're bringing, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're having any trouble locating information about benefits, reach out to us and we can clarify them for you. It should be noted that the award benefits that are listed in the award catalog are estimates. So when you do go on your grant, there may be some slight change, but they do. It's meant to give you sort of an idea of what the grant benefits would be.
Okay, we have another question about the percent breakdown required, the minimum or the maximum for the teaching and research awards if you're proposing to do a combination of teaching and research. So that's a good question. If it's a particular ratio, it'll be mentioned in the award if the country has a specific request for that. They'll mention 50-50 or 20-80 or what have you. If there's no mention of a particular ratio between teaching and research, then that's up to the scholar. So you would need to outline that in your project statement and provide kind of how you would, if you're proposing to teach one course, and then the bulk of your time would be on research, then you need to kind of give us that percentage breakdown. So unless it's specifically outlined, it's up to the scholar to determine that.
So there's a question about when do flex awards have to start? So that depends on the award. For the global award, the earliest grant start date is May of 2019, and the latest that you could start would be May of 2020. But that'll be different for other countries, other awards that offer flex. Some will be in October of 2019, like you said. But if you go into the award descriptions, they should say specifically when the earliest and latest you could start would be.
Okay, and another question we have, would someone over the age of 45 be considered for the early career grant, especially if it's a professional research project? So really it's not about age, it's where you are in your career. So let's say if you had pursued one career and then later you had completed a PhD or a terminal degree, and now it's only been, let's say, 2 years or 3 years since you completed your degree and it's in a completely different field from what you were working in earlier, you would be considered early career for that field, for that discipline. So early career is usually, you know, postdoc to, you know, 5 years, or you, as a professional, you've been in the field for about 5 years. So it's really more about your experience within that discipline rather than your age.
Well, there's a question here. Do Fulbright scholarships apply to dental professionals? Many require a PhD, and I have a DMD. So yes, you do. A DMD is considered a terminal degree by the Fulbright program. Is something worth mentioning, though, is that your grant, you would not be authorized to engage in any activities that would require a license to practice medicine, or to, you know, basically if you're planning on actually like touching any patients, that's not something that you could do on a Fulbright grant. However, if you are planning to go overseas to teach, if you want to teach in a dental school, help develop curriculum, anything like that, would, or do research that doesn't involve actually practicing medicine on any patients, then you could do that. But yes, the DMD is considered a terminal degree.
Okay. Kate, did you want to take another one maybe on the global, or I can take another?
So I assume that this is a question about the global, but could you go to an Eastern European country, a Western European country, and a country from Africa? Yes. So Eastern Europe and Western Europe are all sort of considered a part of one region by the State Department. So you could choose, you know, two of your countries for global to be from the Europe-Eurasia region, but then a third would need to come from a different region, and Africa is one that would be eligible.
Okay, great. We have a question. Let's see. If a U.S. citizen scholar has full tenured professor in an African country, can he apply for the MENA region? So, Kate.
I mean, yes. There's nothing like if you have a tenured position in an African country, that's fine. According to our eligibility requirements, if you have spent more than 5 out of the last 6 years living abroad, then you would not be eligible for this award, for any awards in Fulbright. So I'm assuming that if you have this tenured professorship in an African country, that if it's recent and you've only been over there for a couple of years, then yes. But you would need to have spent some time in the U.S. recently.
Right, and that relates to another question we have. If we have completed our PhD in one of the countries we'd like to conduct research, is that acceptable? So again, the eligibility requirements as outlined on our website for the Fulbright Scholar Program is that if you were out of the country 5 of the last 6 years, you would not be eligible. However, if you've completed your PhD and have spent a significant time in the U.S. to be eligible to apply for the scholar program, that should be fine. But again, if you've spent significant time in that particular country, so you would need to mention why in the project statement, why are you going back to that country in particular, how you hope to build on what you've done there. Again, think about the mission of the Fulbright program is really to foster people-to-people connections and expand mutual understanding and intercultural connections. So if you've already spent significant time in that particular country, we would want to see how you outline that in the how you approach that in the project statement.
Another question for the Global Scholar Award. If links to the three countries are not well defined in previous research, but there are new market trends worth exploring, would this be a worthwhile application? Sure. Yes, like I said, the State Department is really hoping to not send everyone to the same three countries. So if you have discovered a sort of novel way of connecting three different countries, that's absolutely something that would be looked upon favorably in the Global Award. So yeah, go for it, Brandon.
And we have another question. Is a master's degree considered a terminal degree? So it really depends on the discipline. So for example, in the fine arts, an MFA is a terminal degree. But again, and you know, a terminal degree in law is a JD. So it might not always be a PhD. But whatever the highest degree you can attain in that discipline would be considered the terminal degree.
Okay, so I have a question. For the Global Scholar Award, may I budget in a translator for all of my field engagements to collect data for interpersonal engagements, but teach and research in English, all while not having language proficiency in the languages associated with the countries abroad? So yes, you can. You do receive a, as part of your award benefit package, you receive a research allowance, and that's a research allowance of $500 per country visit. So if you would like to use a translator, you would need to pay for that out of the research allowance that you would get, and anything additional would come out of your regular stipend. But that's fairly common. Is there a preference for scholars who have previously hosted scholars from the U.S. under Fulbright or other grants? I'm trying to understand this question. Is there a preference for host scholars? So if you have previously hosted Fulbright scholars on your campus, I think that that is a great thing to mention in your application to sort of show that your commitment to the program and how the sort of mutual understanding, binational nature of the program is something that you already believe in, that you've already invested time in. Let's see, I meant for the scholar in the other country, not for the applicant. Okay, if a host institution has previously hosted Fulbright scholars, is there a preference for that? No, I wouldn't say there's necessarily a preference. If I'm understanding your question correctly, there's no preference. If they haven't hosted a Fulbrighter before, that's fine. Okay, great. An MFA, is an MFA considered, is a Master's of Music considered to hold the same weight as an MFA? I don't think so, no. Michelle, do you have any other opinion on that?
Yeah, I think you can get a Doctorate of Music, so if that is the case, then a Master's would not be considered a terminal degree. However, if the award does not require a terminal degree, you would still be eligible to apply. So don't hold that. Don't let that hold you back. Unless it specifically says PhD or terminal degree required, you would need to have that. You wouldn't need to have it. So
yeah, there are a lot of awards in the catalog that are looking for sort of performing arts, and for a lot of those, a PhD is not required. So if you search in the catalog by you can search by the discipline of music and then search by the PhD or terminal degree not required, a whole list of opportunities will pop up for you.
And we have a question, does the Scholars University get funding to hire an adjunct in the scholar's absence? This is a good question in the sense that it really speaks to what happens if you get selected and what happens at your home university, home institution. So that really depends, and that's something that we don't get involved with. That's something that you would need to, you know, arrange with your university. And having that discussion now, so this is a great time to kind of reach out to the Fulbright campus liaisons or any person relevant that would be supportive in having you apply for a grant, letting your university know that you're applying for a grant, and along the steps of the way we notify applicants as to their status in the process. So if it comes to the point where your application has been forwarded to the in-country commission or embassy for final review, that would also be a good time to update them and let them know that you're being considered seriously for an award and that they need to kind of think about, you can kind of strategize how you're going to do it. So it's really a case-by-case, it's handled on a case-by-case basis for each university. You might want to look in the scholar directory if you're not familiar, if your university has had Fulbrighters go abroad. So see how they've done it. Talk to the campus liaison, get some feedback and suggestions. They could really rally to support you and see how your university's going to support you if you are selected and what the game plan would be when you go on your grant.
Okay, well, all right, it looks like we are reaching the end of the hour here. If we were not able to address your question, please feel free to email us directly. We'll also be archiving this webinar in the next couple of days. So if you're interested in listening again, or you missed a portion, or you'd like to share with your colleagues, it will be there. On behalf of IIE, we'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to attend this webinar. And Michelle and I both look forward to assisting you with your applications.
Thank you, everyone.